This episode of the podcast is brought to you by ResistAll. We live it every day.
What sets ResistAll apart is the legacy of the cowboys who wear the brand. These traditions are passed down from fathers to sons, from heroes to future champions. Since 1927, ResistAll has been handcrafting the finest American-made cowboy hats. Generation after generation, we live it every day.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradud.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got Ricky Bolin. Ricky is the general manager of ResistAll. ResistAll, we all know who they are. We all wear ResistAll hats. They're the largest hat company in the United States. Ricky Bolin is a true inspiration to the cowboy way of life. He has got wonderful rodeo accolades. He's being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He is truly an amazing guy. He was a little shy, a little bit of stage fright. I was surprised by that. So we had Mary Jane sit down with him and kind of help him get his story out. He's going to kill me. But we had a great time. Even though we were freezing cold at the Reagan Rally in the barn that we were occupying with the rain dropping on our shoulders, it worked out. Ricky talks about his story, his introduction to ResistAll, his come up through that company to become the general manager, one of the most important figures in that company. We also get to talk to Mary Jane, who helps outline a few things. We love Ricky. We love ResistAll. We're so thankful to be in partnership with them. We love Mary Jane. She makes life really easy for us. Check it out.
I've been friends with the Steiner family since I was 15 years old. And of course, they were stock contractors.
Yeah.
And went to all their rodeos back when I was rodeoing and stuff. So we've been great friends and for a long time. And when we got to start sponsoring Rocker, it was just one of the greatest things we could do as a company, you know, because Bobby and them were so dedicated to rodeo and stuff. Well, they were forever, and then they got out of it, and then Sid got into the bulldogging and becomes world champion and wins the average that year, and then, you know, Rocker comes in, so we had to be a part of that.
I mean, they're such an interesting family because they're some of the best people on earth that you'll ever meet, but everything they touch kind of goes right. You know, they just have something that when they do things, it works.
Well, there's a reason for that. They have a great attitude, and when they wake up every morning, it's a great day, and they're going to make things work.
Yep.
And that's the difference between – that's why Sid got to go and be the world's champion and win the average the same year, because they don't wait for things to happen. They make things happen. And that's the way Bobby was, and that's the way his dad and mother was. I mean, the whole family's been that way. So it keeps going. And of course, there's nobody any prouder than of their grandson or grandkids than Bobby Steiner, I promise you. I mean, he lives for those grandkids.
I mean, yeah, every time I talk to Rocker, Sid, he's making it happen. I mean, the only reason Rocker even's riding bareback horses is because of Bobby.
So yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
it is. It's really cool.
It's great that they came back into the sport of rodeo, though. I mean, it's
isn't
just
that
like,
crazy, though?
Like, I know, they walked away, and then now they're
twice,
back.
Bobby's walked away twice.
Yeah.
And we're so glad they're back. And when the first photo shoot we got to do with them, I pulled out a picture and showed Bobby. I was Miss Rodeo Mississippi, and I was with Bobby and his dad at a rodeo in Jackson, Mississippi. That was way back.
You don't have to say how long ago.
Yeah, that's I won't fine. Say how long.
it is funny, though, because that I kind of wish Sid was 15 years younger and that he would have done his world championship, the show that he put on, because I was such a little kid.
Yeah.
And we say this all the time, we're all God-loving cowboys, right? That's us. It's all pure cowboy. But this dude comes in looking like he was like the front man for Poison or something.
Yeah.
You know, and he put on a show and he took those fines, ripping his shirt off and just being ripped and jacked and just creating an environment in rodeo that hadn't really ever existed, right? And then he goes, wins a world title, leaves the
disappears.
Sport.
Disappears.
Right.
You just don't see stuff that is that level of cool in rodeo because everybody's kind of the same. It's like October to October to October to October. And Bobby did it with the bull riding, and you just get to see stuff that you don't from them you get to see a different level of entertainment. Right. And Rocker's doing it too.
Yeah.
In his own way.
And Steely after Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie was an NFR barrel racer and Steely's following in her footsteps. So they're all winners.
Yeah.
You know, they've been rodeoing Steely and they've been up here for what, a couple of months now?
They've been here since June, they were telling me.
Yeah, they've been rodeoing around here, and I think Bobby said the other day she's won $10,000 or $15,000, which
just in the little circuit rodeos here?
Yeah, in these circuit rodeos. But the thing about it is every barrel racer in the world is here, because this is where all the rodeos are at, and so she's competing against the best, and you know, and still winning. So that's great.
I mean, that's the best proven ground if you're young and rodeoing, because like for us, me and my sisters, we grew up in Colorado, right? And so we had Colorado High School Rodeo and the Junior Rodeo Associations, but those don't even, like, they don't pay for themselves.
Yeah.
If you want to make any money as a kid, you go to the amateur rodeos.
Right.
And we all bought pickups and cars from winning at those amateur rodeos.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's the best place to kind of get your start.
Now, I'm going to say, Ricky, have you ever been to an amateur rodeo? I don't think you've ever entered one, have you?
No, I did. When I first started, I started riding bulls when I was 10, and I rode in amateur rodeos up until I was 15, and I got my pro card. I had to have Jim Shoulders and Neil Gay sign for me, because I was too young. You're supposed to be 18 years old, but they signed for me to get my card early.
Yeah.
So I went to a few amateur rodeos, but for the most part, it was all pro rodeos.
Yeah. I mean, bull riding, back in those days, you just probably didn't have a lot of amateur options, did you?
No, really, there were. There was CRA, and there was quite a few amateur rodeos. Yeah. There was quite a few of them, but didn't work for me.
Yeah, you just wanted to run and gun.
Yeah. Huh? Well, I grew up around Donnie Gay, and you know, Monty Henson's my brother-in-law. I married his sister. So I was around pro rodeo guys most of my life, even, you know, in my very young days. So I never really went to just a lot of amateur rodeos.
Right. Okay, so Mary Jane here said that you had some really good stories. But since she's kind of your proxy here, I'm going to let her kind of pick a story and have you tell it. I think that might be fun.
Pick a story.
Pick it.
Oh, goodness. A bull riding story.
He's got
so many stories, like his American Dream story I was telling
you
about.
Well, you were telling me about it, but he said he didn't want to talk about it, but I think he does now.
Let's start from now and work backwards. So recently, Ricky got the word that he's being inducted into the National Cowboy Hall of Fame, which is amazing, and it really puts a feather in his cap for his career.
Yeah, it's a unbelievable award or to be inducted to the National Cowboy Hall of Fame. But the greatest thing about it is we've been sitting here talking about the Steiner family. It's myself, Bobby, Sid, Tuff Edelman, Cody Lambert, Jerome Robertson are the inductees.
I mean, that's
year.
A pretty stacked.
Yeah.
It's group of guys. Holy cow.
Yes.
You know, and to get to go into that Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City, I've been there as a kid. In 1978 was my first NFR in Oklahoma City, and I remember writing my dad a letter thanking him for, and today is his birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday.
He passed away, I guess, 12 years ago. So anyway, today's his birthday, and I wrote him a letter back in 1978 when I made the NFR, because he'd helped me a lot, you know, to get down the road and stuff, and told him we finally made the big show. And I remember we actually went to the Cowboy Hall of Fame and visited and walked through it and stuff when we were there. And it's pretty cool to be inducted to that, to be able to. Yeah, I wished I could tell him. It'd be, it's a cool story.
Very cool. So Ricky got to ride in Oklahoma City and the first Vegas NFR, right?
Yeah, I went to my first NFR was 78 in Oklahoma City, and then 79, and then 83, which was the first year they moved it to the Marriott Center downtown. And then my last year was in 85 when they first year they moved it to Las Vegas. So that was a different experience.
What was that like, though? I mean, because I've always been interested in the guys who, because it was such a contentious thing when they took it from Oklahoma City and moved it to Vegas. What was it like being on the ground for that?
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
The first year there was, I mean, the Cowboys hated it. You know, in Oklahoma City, everybody stayed at the same hotel, like we all stayed at the Holiday Inn, and that was every event at first, the first year I made it there. And then, of course, when they moved it downtown, everybody stayed at the same hotel. But the national finals, back then was really when the timed event guys and the ride event guys kind of got to know each other, because we were all staying at the same hotel and around each other, and we got to visit and stuff. Other than that, when you're out on the rodeo trail, you wasn't really, you know, you didn't have time to be buddies with each other. But then we did, and it was a lot of fun. But the first year they moved it to Las Vegas, everybody was spread out all over Las Vegas because different hotels sponsored different events and stuff. And
it was a cluster. They didn't have anything dialed in?
No, it was a cluster. And, like, the parking was terrible. I remember, I'll tell a story, Donnie and I, it was my wife and my oldest daughter, who was a baby back then. So anyway, it was Donnie's wife and my wife and our two small children. And they were in the back of the van. And actually, my mom and dad were back there. And Donnie, we pull up to go park, and this guy, he's like 6'7", you know. We were driving a van, Donnie was, and this guy's like looking eye to eye with Donnie. That's how tall he was. So Donnie says, "Hey, I'm going to park over there." And this guy's, "Nah, you're not." And so anyway, Donnie, he was a little cocky back then, still is a little bit, but he'd won the world several times by then. So he pulls up his buckle and asks this guy if he could read. Yeah, I says, "Yeah, I can read." Well, Donnie said something else smart to him. About that time, this guy reaches through the window and drags Donnie out the window. The van is still in drive. My mom and dad, my wife, Donnie's wife, and our two kids are in the back of this van. I have to jump over. And, you know, this story is so incredible because last night, Bruce Ford's here. And so when this guy jerks Donnie out the window, the van takes off. I've got to stop the van. And by the time I get the van stopped, Bruce Ford is on this guy's back.
Really?
He's got him around the neck, choking him to where he'll let Donnie go. And anyway, that was one of our first experiences, the first performance when we pulled up to national finals in 1985.
So there's no way to forget that.
No, that's a story.
Were you pretty quiet guy back then, kind of like you are now, or were you a little wild back in those days?
You know, I have my moments. I can get out there amongst everybody, but for the most part, I'm kind of laid back.
So speaking of the van, I don't know if it's the same van, but this is a really cool story because, you know, Resistol was one of the very first sponsors of the PRCA, and we've been there 50-something years, and so we talk about sponsorships constantly, but Ricky is actually the pioneer of sponsorships with the PRCA. So he drove the first sponsored vehicle, and it was the Coors van. And I wish we had pictures to show you how cool shag carpet, you know, thing the van was.
But isn't that interesting that, I mean, it's a relatively new concept, right, as far as sponsoring rodeo. And I mean, the patch thing's only been around for like a decade.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an interesting, the evolution of the sport with companies like Resistol, or, I mean, you name them, kind of jumping on board and understanding the importance of branding and the value of that. I mean, it's kind of changed the whole landscape of rodeos and rodeo shirts.
Yeah, 100%. Back then, like I say, there was no advertising in the arena on the Cowboys or anything, and it was probably 1992, I guess. We were at Killeen, Texas, and the rodeos are with me. We were walking out the back gate. And I saw this van over there, and it was all lit up. It didn't have any markings on it or anything, and doors were open, music was playing. So I walk over there, and there was a guy named Dennis Boulding, and I just got to visiting with him, and he owned a Coors distributorship in Temple, Texas. And he had on, like, gold, you know, diamond rings and gold Rolex watches and stuff. And so I just sat down, I got bullshitting with him, and I said, has Coors ever thought about sponsoring one individual? And he goes, "No, not that I know of." So anyway, we had a couple more beers and shook his hand, took off. Well, at the end of that year, we were at Fort Worth, Texas at the Texas Circuit Finals. And I walk up to the concession stand, and there's this guy. Dennis was a big man. He's about 6'6". And he's just weaving back and forth. Well, I don't remember who he is, but he's weaving back and forth. He's so drunk. And he looks over at me, and he goes, "Hey." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "I think I'm going to do that deal." I don't have a clue what he's talking about. I don't know who he is. So he reaches in his pocket, and he hands me a business card, and it's Coors Boulding Distributing. And it clicked who he was. So he said, "I'm going to do that deal." And I said, "Well, that'd be great." And so I didn't think too much about it because he was, you know, pretty intoxicated. But I got to asking people about him. And they said, if Dennis Boulding tells you something in his sleep, you can count on it. So then I get excited. Well, about 2 weeks, he told me to come down to his office in 2 weeks, and I did. When I walked into his office, there was a check made out to me on the corner of his desk for $1,000. And he looked at me and he goes, you want a handshake or a contract? And I said, handshake? He goes, that's exactly the way I like to do business. He said, let's go. I said, where are we going? He goes, well, if you're going to rodeo, you got to have something to drive. So we go down to Chevrolet dealership, and he buys me a van, and it's just a plain Jane van, nothing in it or on it. And I sent it to Fort Worth, Texas, and Mayhem was trying to sing back then, and he had a bus, and he had this hippie guy that was smoked a lot of pot and stuff, and he was painting this bus for Mayhem. And so anyway, I called and asked him if I could get this hippie, because we had a bumper sticker and a jacket that used to have a Coors emblem on it, and that's what Dennis wanted this van painted like. So I got the hippie, and he painted, hand-painted this van, and I drove it for about 5 years. And so Dennis paid me $1,000 a month, which is back in early 90s.
That's a good contract now.
Yeah, that was a lot of money. And furnished me this vehicle. Had my name on the side of it and his name on the side of it. And the only thing he told me, he said, you got to keep it clean. That's what you got to do, and drive it. So, but back then, you know, Coors wasn't in Florida. And, like, we'd rodeo a lot in Florida, and we'd be down there, and people would try to pull us over on the side of the road thinking we had beer. Full of Coors beer and stuff. So,
and yeah. You say, no, we rodeo.
Yeah.
And they're like,
no, we're professionals. We don't have any. So, but, yeah, some great times.
Well, okay, so here's what's interesting. Mary Jane was bragging on you quite a bit, talking about when you decided to quit rodeo. I'd really like to kind of hear the story about when you decided to stop riding bulls.
Well, I always told myself when I was 30 I wanted to quit, but my problem was I never figured out what the hell I wanted to do after that. I never had a plan. And I always bought my hats at our Resist All Outlet store there in Garland, Texas, and become pretty good friends with the manager over there. And, you know, there is truth to saying that God looks after idiots, and I was one of them. Because, like I said, I never had a plan. Lane Frost got killed that year. I had two daughters and everything. And just, they came up to me, the manager of this outlet store, and he said, hey, I think I'm going to leave this company. He said, I've got another job. And he said, would you be interested in taking this over? And I said, I don't know anything about it. And he goes, you don't have to. They'll teach you, and they want to hire you. So they hired me, and it just so happened the owner was a Jewish gentleman out of Richmond, Virginia, and he and I just clicked. He was one of those guys that everybody was scared to death of, and I was too dumb to be scared. And, you know, I just treated him like anybody else. Well, I think that's why he and I got along so well, is because I treated him just like anybody else. So I went to work for him. I was there for about a year, and we ended up opening up another store. He gave me 50% of it in Oklahoma City. We did both of them for about 3 years, and then we sold the one in Oklahoma City. And he ended up selling the company, and I became an outside sales rep. And I did that for about 15 years. And then went into the office as national sales manager. Did that for about 6 years, and then I became the general manager of the company. I guess it's been about 6 years ago now. So I've had a great career. My rodeo career was unbelievable, and I know I've talked a lot about Bobby Steiner, but he's a great friend of mine. And, you know, we talked about it the other day. If we had it to do over again, we would do it again. And I might change things a little bit, but for the most part, I've had Mary Jane calls it a storybook life. I have had a storybook life. I won't say I've reached every goal that I've set, but I've reached a lot of them. And just great people like her make me look good.
I just feel like he is like the example of the American dream. I mean, he was able to rodeo, do what he loved, went to four NFRs, and then left, and then started a career, and 31 years later, he's the general manager of the largest hat company in the world. So it's pretty cool.
I'm saying, I mean, if that's not inspiring for people, because here's what happens a lot with rodeo, right? Or people who rodeo. And this is kind of the tragedy of our industry. It's one of the things that if you listen to the shows about everyone, you'll hear me say something about how important it is for people to understand when to stop rodeoing and people needing to understand how to transition to something else. And not instead of being the American dream, being the American tragedy, because that's more common in our industry than the American dream.
Oh, yeah.
There's just a lot of people who rodeoed at the highest level. There's people who've had amazing careers who don't know what to do next, and they never figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
And for people like you who went from step A to Z and did it correctly, even if by accident, it's really important for you to be inducted into the Hall of Fames and to tell these stories, because one guy who may not know what to do next might hear that, and it may change the outcome of his life.
The great thing is that people like Ricky Bolin and Bobby Steiner, they knew when to walk away, but they still have such an impact on the Western lifestyle and the Western industry, and they're still helping that industry move forward, you know, in a very successful way. It's inspiring.
It's inspiring,
cool.
And it's the most important thing in our industry. It's more important than the best ropers or the best riders. That's all important, but to keep the history alive and grow it, it takes people just like you. So,
well, I appreciate that, but I do think these days and times there's more kids coming around that have college educations and do have a plan for the life after rodeo. I think that's more so now than it was back when I was rodeoing. There was a lot of guys that I rodeoed with that were like me. You know, I'm not proud of it, but I left high school thinking that rodeo was the only thing I'd ever have to do in my life. Like I say, God's blessed me with a lot of opportunities, and he gave me brains enough to take those opportunities. And that's where guys have to step up to the plate when they get through rodeoing, and they have to put it behind them. They have to step up to the plate and take those challenges and not be scared to walk through those doors. Because if you don't walk through the doors, you're probably not going to go very far after rodeo.
Absolutely. Cheers to that, guys.
Cheers, yes.
And thank you guys for taking the time to come on the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being one of our wonderful sponsors as well.
We're thankful to be a sponsor of the show. We think what y'all are doing is incredible. Like I said, the guests that you've had on this show are amazing, and for you to be able to talk about the Western lifestyle and rodeo and just anything is fun and
it is
entertaining. So thank you for that.
I think we need it, and I do appreciate your story, and hopefully we can do another one at some point a little more in depth.
Yeah, for sure.
Will you open up a little more, Ricky?
Perfect. Thank you, bud.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
What sets Resist All apart is the legacy of the cowboys who wear the brand. These traditions are passed down from fathers to sons, from heroes to future champions. Since 1927, Resist All has been handcrafting the finest American-made cowboy hats. Generation after generation, we live it.
This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content by Cassie Emerson. Our theme song is by Shay Ashire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next time.